Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Hey, hey! It's almost the weekend! I am so excited about sleeping. Sleeping in the hotel room here in Chicago that I'll have for a few hours when I get off the air. I know that sounds so exciting, doesn't it? But that's my favorite thing about the weekends. Getting off work and feeling like I can sleep without having to set an alarm. I mean, the dog typically wakes me up. But yeah, it'll be fun to not only get a few hours of sleep without worrying about having to walk a dog, but also I'm going to spend a little extra time here in Chicago with my cousin who lives in the suburbs outside the city near the airport. And I don't get to see her except for when I come through for business. So I'll spend about 24 hours with her and her family and then head back to my own house and my own zoo and be ready for the start of our next work week. It never stops. Sports never stop. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. I'm seeing your tweets about the NFL schedule, and that's awesome. Thank you so much for filling some of the blanks, because not only did I not have time to look at the schedule on Thursday, but honestly, I don't know. I'm trying to be as honest as I possibly can. I don't know how much time I would have spent looking at it anyway, because to me, it just feels like a bunch of names and dates and yeah. So I'm counting on you to do the legwork for me. It's too early for me to really process football on the schedule because there's a lot happening between now and then. But if you have some games that stand out to you, I'd love to hear what they are. I did see one fan who sent me a very optimistic tweet about how week 16, or I think he meant game 16, week 17, will decide a division title. I mean, that's what the NFL would hope, but come on. That's the kind of stuff that drives me nutso. No, you can't predict how a team is going to finish just because you see their schedule. What? But, you know, to each his own. So you can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio, if that's something that you would like to do. But I will definitely share some of these tweets about the games that you're looking forward to and the ones you've already have circled on your calendar. And I did just put a little post up on our Facebook page, so I hope you can see it. I don't even know anymore with Facebook algorithms. Maybe because I've changed locations and I'm in Chicago, maybe the Facebook algorithm will be more, apt to put this on the information superhighway. I have no idea why a change of location would do any good, but let me know if you can see it. So it's on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Okay, let's see. 855-212-4227. That's our number to reach us inside the Quicken Loans studios. National mortgage lender, Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. I want to do a little baseball this hour just because there's some blockbuster early season storylines. And it's early, really early. So you don't need to get all like over the top crazy about it, whether optimistic or negative, just because there's so much real estate left to go that anything can and will happen. But the idea of, you know, franchise record starts or, you know, big injuries, that's something that we follow early on. Also changes to, you know, rotations or guys getting dropped in the lineup. Those are all things that could have ripple effects and that could also end up making a huge difference as we get deeper into the season. So there are some that I would consider to be headline grabbers early on. So I want to do a little bit of that. If you want to talk about the NBA playoffs, I can't be the only one who's stunned by what's happening with the Blazers and feeling like this Rondo Holiday backcourt for the Pelicans has become the perfect complement to Anthony Davis. And Nico Mirotic had 30 points on Thursday night. He only missed three shots the entire game. And so this Pelicans group, and I don't want it to sound like I think they're better without Boogie Cousins, because I don't. I mean, he's a double-double guy. He's a force to be reckoned with in many ways. But the way that this team has responded to the challenge, the way that they not only improved their standing in the West, but put together some pretty incredible win streaks over the course of the second half of the season, and now, brimming with confidence, have taken their first three games against the three seed in Portland, is impressive. Regardless of what happens with the Pelicans through the rest of this postseason, and then on into, you know, whatever series might happen, might end up being, you know, their last one, who knows how far they'll go, regardless of whatever happens with them in this particular spring stretch, they have laid some of that groundwork. And what did I just talk about at the end of last hour? Built a culture, or they're continuing to build a culture. It's not one thing you can pinpoint on, you know, in a point in time. It doesn't work like that. It's a series of events and a lot of hard work. But they're going to use this to then, as long as these guys stay together, to draw upon this experience, and it will make them better. It will make them more formidable, not just the confidence, but the learning how to do it on the game's biggest stage. And so you've got a couple of guys who've been part of playoff runs before, but as a whole, and certainly for the Pelicans, you're talking about figuring out, hey, we can do this. Here's how we do it. And trying to put all those pieces in place that make them a contender. It is a process. I don't want to steal from Joel Embiid and the 76ers, but obviously, and I'm not even using the hashtag, it is a process. It takes some time. It takes the right people. It takes the right leadership and all of that jazz. But they have impressed. They have surprised people, and probably even themselves too a little bit. And whatever happens in this, you know, these next few weeks is a springboard for them. So we can talk basketball. It's a complete opposite for the Portland Trail Blazers right now. After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. Hockey. I'm sorry. I was like, I'm missing something. There's another sport out there. there's got to be some concern about the Patrice Bergeron injury for the Boston Bruins, considering that that was a late piece of news and there's not been a whole lot of information. Very secretive. Cards close to the vest when it comes to hockey injuries, but there was no indication that that was going to happen earlier in the day on Thursday before they hit the ice. And while it hasn't slowed them down, that's one of their best players. And so we'll want to keep our eyes out for any news about Patrice. Other game was Columbus and Washington, and you felt like the Capitals watching it were more like the Capitals that we expected. Although, I don't know, in the postseason, can there be any expectations about the Washington Capitals? Maybe not. But at least to be able to match up against the Columbus Blue Jackets. And so they looked to me more like a team that believed it can win and expected that there would be a W on the board. Just quirky that it's been four consecutive wins by the visiting team, and now they're back to even. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. So A-Law Radio on Twitter, and then also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Let me see. While I'm looking at some of these, you guys actually have dates down. I mean, you have circled dates on the calendar. Here's the tweet I was talking about. Eddie says, Buffalo at New England, week 16, should decide the East. I mean, first of all, there are two other teams in the East. And second of all, how do you know that? It's week 16. That'll be the end of December. Gosh, at least Jay is not quite as ambitious. His is Atlanta at the Eagles opening Thursday night game. So he's just going with the very first game of the NFL season as the one that is circled on his calendar. Hunter, same thing on Twitter, says week one, Jimmy G versus Cousins. And I get his point is the Niners and the Vikings. And even though the quarterbacks are not on the field at the same time, you're talking about a whole lot of intrigue there. Billy on Twitter, Monday night, Lions versus the Jets in Detroit. I feel like if the Lions lose, it's going to be a bad year. Oh, dear. You guys crack me up. Steven says my Redskins have a hard schedule this year. I mean, hard schedule. A lot of times it just depends on which other divisions you've got slotted in. And those are slotted like years in advance, which two divisions you'll play outside of your own. And then there are two kind of floating games that are based on your record from the previous season. It's this whole big formula. But yeah, if you end up playing two divisions, again, outside of your own, where you play each team twice, if you end up playing divisions that are more difficult or have teams, you know, maybe that sent divisions that sent multiple teams to the playoffs the year before, then yeah, it could all of a sudden look a lot more difficult when it first comes out. Let's see. Tim has Sunday, November 4th on his schedule. that's down the road too. It even has the time for me, 8:20 p.m., which would be Eastern time. Patriots versus Aaron Rodgers, that is, at Gillette Stadium. I mean, come on, Tim. I hope that you've got something else that you're really excited about before then. But yeah, that's certainly one that I think Patriots fans have been looking forward to even before this schedule came out, maybe even before the end of last season. I remember getting calls from some Patriots fans and even some Packers fans about how that was a game that people were going to be looking forward to. And then Marty sends me this ridiculous tweet. I'm just going to call it ridiculous because it is. Patriots versus everyone because the dynasty continues. I don't know, Marty, if you'd notice, but the Patriots aren't actually the defending champs. So the dynasty hit a snag. It hit a speed bump in February. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio. This appealed to me. I did see this as I was kind of perusing some of the columns that were written about the NFL schedule. The playoffs begin January 5th and 6th. So that's wild card weekend and always circled on the schedule. Cause I love to take after hours to the Super Bowl is February 3rd. That's the championship game in Atlanta. It's Atlanta this year. So that'd be fun. I always enjoy being in Atlanta. I've done a ton of shows from Atlanta. My best friend lives there. My agent actually is there too. And with the brand new stadium and brand new football stadium, but also a brand new baseball stadium too. I'll be in Atlanta in June doing a couple of shows during the NBA finals. So to have a Super Bowl in Atlanta is going to be a lot of fun. It's harder to do with the schedule of the show because it's East Coast, Eastern time. There need to be more Super Bowls on the West Coast so that the West Coast hours that we keep, or at least mentally that we keep, that makes it a little easier on the physical body. So then mental and physical lineup. But Atlanta's going to be awesome, and I am looking forward to that February 3rd. And even as I say that, I just know the year's going to fly by. The NFL draft is almost here. Why don't we start with the draft before I get too, like, jazzed up about a Super Bowl? The NFL draft is almost here. Nobody covers it better than NFL Network. So you can go behind the scenes and into all 32 war rooms as the stars of tomorrow are selected. The 2018 NFL draft starts April 26th. So this time next week, we'll have the round one in the books on both NFL Network and Fox. Now, coming up, did you hear the crazy rumor? Maybe rumor is the wrong word. Did you hear the crazy report about what the Browns could do with picks number 1 and picks number 4 that they have in that draft a week from today, I guess, if you're still awake on your Thursday night? We'll discuss that. As I said, a couple of baseball trendy storylines that I think are kind of surprising early on. And then on Twitter, A-Law Radio, or on our Facebook page. Yeah, sure enough, some of you have actually circled NFL dates on your calendar. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Skaggs ready to deliver now the 1-2 pitch to Devers. Here it comes. Breaking ball hit in the air to right field and deep. This ball headed back toward the wall. It is off the scoreboard. And that should be a grand slam. It is a grand slam for Rafael Devers.
There's a drive to left field deep. Way back down the line, and it is gone. A home run, Mookie. His second leadoff home run of this series.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Yeah, that series between the Red Sox and the Angels turned out to be pretty lopsided. You hear the calls on the Red Sox radio network. First, Rafael Devers' grand slam from two nights ago in a game that was a 9-0 shutout. And then, once again, a Mookie Betts home run, second leadoff homer in three games for the Red Sox, and they end up sweeping the Angels. And the final tally was 27-3. 27-3. And it's not just Mookie Betts who's had a really hot bat. Andrew Benintendi has also come through with some timely hitting as well. And you don't score 27 runs unless a lot of guys are taking their hacks. And so 27-3. And the Red Sox are the first team to start 16-2 since the 1987 Brewers. So it's their best start in franchise history, but it's also one that kind of stands up against some of the others over the course of the last several decades. We're not just talking about Red Sox history anymore. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Seven straight wins for the Red Sox as they sweep the Angels. And I don't know. I don't know if this turns out to be a historic start that catapults them into an incredible summer and then maybe turns them into a World Series contender. It's way too early to start to plan on that. But considering the angst that there has been around the Red Sox the last couple years and trying to, you know, bring some highly paid, very expensive pieces into the fold and figure out a way to get back to the point where they can win a World Series, and the changes include a new manager and Alex Cora. There's a lot to like, and the spirit is different around the Red Sox. And you can see it when they play. You can hear it when they talk. And maybe it's about guys maturing. Maybe it's about guys being on the same page. Maybe it's about a different voice. I mean, that seems to be kind of a buzz phrase that we hear when changes are made. Maybe it's all of those things kind of wrapped into one. But certainly this kind of start, the winning, the excitement then ends up breeding confidence and breeding more excitement and chemistry. And there have been times in the past several years where the Red Sox chemistry has been really off, I think to the detriment of whatever they might have been trying to do on the field. Only the 18th game for the Red Sox, but Mookie Betts is at .400 batting average already. And he already has 21 runs this season, so not even through 20 games, and he's already scored 21 runs, and it puts him in a category with the likes of a Ted Williams and a Johnny Pesky. By the way, the Pesky pole is named after him at Fenway Park, for most by a Red Sox player through 18 games. But he's kind of looking around the rest of their clubhouse and spreading out the praise and sharing the wealth.
I feel good. I mean, just trying to get some good pitches and swing it the right way, but you know, this offense we've kind of feed off each other, so I know if I can try and get things started there, I know we're going to score some runs.
You guys remember the show we did not that long ago about the, let me see if I can make sure I can use the right wording that I used before, the sports city or region that was the envy of all the others? We kind of meant present and future. We weren't talking about past, how many championship trophies you already have, but thinking about the here and now and then projecting forward. And there were a lot of different answers, and it was a spirited debate. I really enjoyed it. You know, Bay Area and Houston and Philadelphia. This was right after Villanova had won the championship in college basketball. And I got a lot of, rightfully so, got a lot of tweets and calls and Facebook posts from sports fans in New England. And certainly, if you think about the Red Sox start now, which has become historic, if you think about the Bruins, and yes, there's an injury there, and we'll wait to see, but they're looking really good so far in their early series against the Maple Leafs. You think about the Boston Celtics and everything they've overcome to where they are again, early in the playoffs for both hoops and hockey and the Pats. And the biggest stories about the Pats every day seems like, oh my gosh, Tom Brady hasn't committed to playing 2018. Oh my gosh, Gronk is not with the team for offseason workouts. Oh my gosh, there's a divorce that's on the horizon. It's just, it's more contrived drama than I think is anything that could really affect the team. So those four teams make a strong case. It looks even stronger now with the way that the Red Sox have come out of the gate. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. 855-212-4227 or Twitter, Facebook. You know the addresses. Thanks for tuning in. This headline caught my eye, even as kind of crazy as my Thursday was, going straight from work to the airport and then flying in the Uber and the hotel and the event that I had to do. But there's a report. Sometimes I say rumor and I feel like that's a slight. It could be perceived as a slight. I don't mean it to be that way. But there's a report out there that potentially the Cleveland Browns could use both their number one draft pick and their number four overall draft pick on two quarterbacks. So not just one, but two. Is this like overcompensating here because they passed on Carson Wentz and Deshaun Watson? And now maybe they think if we pick two, we will have a better chance to strike it rich with at least one of them. Our odds go up of potentially finding that franchise guy. So yeah, this kind of blew me away. The Browns have other needs. It's not that it hasn't been done in the past where franchises have used two picks on quarterbacks in the same draft. I mean, think about the RG3 and the Kirk Cousins and how critical that was for the Washington Redskins. But to use number one and number four on quarterbacks? On the heels of the poll that we put out there on Twitter, which actually is still ongoing, this kind of made me laugh because I got a bunch of reaction to, and we had it on Facebook too, to the question of how many quarterbacks get selected in the top 10. Well, you'd have to add another one if the Browns actually do pick a QB at number one and number four. That seems kooky to me.
Twitter can blow up.
John Dorsey has said again, Hugh Jackson's expressed this sentiment, and now John Dorsey has said again that they do not know what they're doing with the number one pick, that his phone I think he said something about his phone not being dead. The battery is still charged on his phone, so he could still take phone calls about potentially making trades with other teams that want to move up. So there's a lot of speculation about the way the Browns might go, and I think adding to it is the fact that they're putting different... they're putting different storylines and narratives out there too, to throw other teams off the scent or potentially to drive up the price if there's a team that's willing to deal as we get closer to the draft. There is probably some truth to we have this plan and then maybe this plan and maybe this plan and maybe that plan. And they're still debating it and looking at numbers, no doubt, and trying to decide what would be the best course of action. I just can't fathom that they would take a quarterback at number one and number four. You don't need to. If you want a second quarterback, you could take another quarterback later in the draft and not have to use your number four pick on it. After all, they have a lot of picks. I mean, they traded some, but they still have plenty of picks to be able to make that happen if that's what they want to do. So, yeah, this is...
Browns!
This is... I mean, yeah, I guess you do increase your odds of getting the man... but just that to me feels like overkill, and the Browns have other needs they should address with this draft and could potentially bring in another franchise guy with the number four pick. But I mean, they've had so many swings and misses with quarterbacks that you can understand the overcompensation and the stress about getting it right. So throw that into the mix for the draft a week from Thursday night and this idea that there could actually be not just a quarterback taken at one or at two if the Giants pick a QB at two, three with the Jets, but then the Browns again at number four and number five, potentially the Broncos. I mean, think about that. Could you imagine if we had quarterbacks taken one, two, three, four, and five? Football's kooky, which is why we're so hooked. All right, A-Law Radio, if there's a game on the NFL schedule that sticks out, or on our Facebook page, too.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Draymond steps back, launches away. It's up and good. Draymond buried it straight on. He's got a long look at Danny Green's direction and a few verbal suggestions as well. West tipped it out, and it goes to Klay Thompson again. He'll fire for three. Got it! Oh, the Warriors kept it alive, and Steph Curry holds both hands on top of his head. He can't believe it. 87-76 Warriors. Thompson doubled to the sideline. Looped the pass to Draymond. Steps around pressure. Throws it out to Quinn Cook. He fires away. Buries the three. And a timeout for the Spurs. The Warriors and the Spurs had to put together a game three at Golden State with a workmanlike effort. And they come away with a win 110-97 as they took the game away in the second half. And now lead this best of seven series 3-0.
I think we've been in a decent rhythm. I think there's still another level we can get to. And I have no doubt in my mind that we will get to that level. But with as bad as we were playing, to kind of get to where we are now is pretty solid. And, you know, it's the first round.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Yeah, it's a step-by-step. It's a process. And so for the Warriors, as inconsistent and let's face it, as inconsistent and as lifeless as they looked at times through the second half of the season, and certainly the way they finished the season with that, was it a 40-point loss to the Utah Jazz, if I remember correctly, and the way that Steve Kerr was ready to pull his hair out, and he tried everything. He tried embarrassing them publicly. He tried calling them out publicly. He tried cajoling and poking and prodding, and really nothing was getting them to play night in and night out with the same sense of urgency. The players are responding now, and I'm not sure if that's good or bad. I mean, there are certainly teams that have the ability to flip a switch when the bright lights are on, when the attention is there, when the game holds a significance like it doesn't during the regular season for a team that's been there, done that. I mean, that makes sense, right? Not every team can do it. Not every team has the ability, but also not every team has that perspective like the Warriors do or like the Cavs do. I mean, these two teams are unique in the fact that they've faced each other now three times in three consecutive NBA finals, but also the fact that they've got guys who have had so much success and have played so deep into recent seasons. And I mean, it's maybe frustrating, even more frustrating for Steve Kerr, because here they are doing what he's been asking them to do all along, but he couldn't get them to do it when he was, you know, poking and prodding and pleading with them at times, calling them pathetic. But the idea is to win in the playoffs and to, you know, to be playing your best basketball this time of the year. And that's what we're seeing from them now, even without Steph Curry. Klay Thompson's been in a great rhythm, kind of picked up where he left off with the end of the regular season, in which he had career shooting percentages, career highs in both overall field goal percentage as well as three-point percentage. And we know what Kevin Durant is capable of for sure. You see the extra intensity from Draymond Green, technicals and all. And some of the other guys that are getting their first taste of the playoffs with the Warriors, JaVale McGee's been an athletic option, and their defense has definitely ticked up a notch. It's trending up. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Tim Roy is the play-by-play voice of the Golden State Warriors. There was a little bit of concern about Kevin Durant at the end of their game, a game that, you know, by the fourth quarter, they had put, you know, enough of a cushion between them and the Spurs. The Spurs weren't going to make any kind of a run, and that's another thing that they lack without Kawhi Leonard. But Kevin Durant tweaked his ankle, and so there's, you know, all kinds of questions about whether or not he'd be able to play in game four. Is this going to be another big injury that the Warriors have to deal with? But he kind of poo-pooed that, and it's fine. Everything's fine. It wasn't nearly as bad as what it looked like or what it could have been. This game notable as well because Greg Popovich wasn't there, and the entire organization feeling that, but guys who've been there for such a long time, like Tony Parker, who actually lived with the Popoviches for a while. He entered the league as a 19-year-old, and he said that Aaron and Greg are like a mother and father to him. And then Manu Ginobili, who has been there for such a long time and definitely recognizes what Pop is as a family man, not just as a coach. And thought it was pretty typical of Pop that even though he wasn't there, and even though the Spurs wanted to honor his late wife, he asked them not to play any type of a video tribute or even hold a moment of silence. He wanted the game to be as much of a routine as it possibly could be for his players. I'm glad he was with his family instead of being on the sidelines. And I'm glad that he could take that time away and have the support of people who love him, not just as a basketball coach, but as a man, as a father, as a grandfather. But that seems so much like Pop. Don't want any extra attention being drawn to what's happening behind the curtain, even if it is for his wife that he was married to for four decades. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. Our toll-free line is 855-212-4227. It's brought to you by Geico. With a quick way that you can save money, switch to Geico. And if you need homeowners, renters, or motorcycle insurance, you can get it all at geico.com. Again, it's 855-212-4227, 855-212-4227. My trip to Chicago was courtesy of the USGA. And so I'm here at AM 670 The Score in the Windy City. And on Thursday evening, I had the opportunity to moderate a panel that included a former major winner on the women's tour, Jane Geddes, maybe a name that you're familiar with. She's one of the women who helped to pave the way for the Paula Creamers and the Lexi Thompsons of the world now. Brittany Lindsay comes and she was playing. It's had a chance to ask her about what golf was like when she played, and she won her U.S. Open in the mid-80s, I believe. I always enjoy asking athletes from a different era. And when I said that to her, I apologize. I'm sorry, I don't mean to make you sound old. But I always enjoy asking athletes of a different era what it was like, what are the biggest differences as they look at the tour now. And so that was really interesting to talk to her about just how much the game has grown and how it's become. Definitely it was her moneymaker, but how it's become global and it's become a goal for so many young women to be a professional golfer now, as opposed to maybe something they stumbled into. And also, I found this interesting as well. I didn't know this before the event on Thursday night, that of all of the college sports and the scholarships that are available for young women, for females, there are more unclaimed scholarships in golf for women than there are in any other sport. And so parents out there, if you want your daughter's college education to be paid for, well, then maybe you should shepherd her toward the game of golf. So Jane Geddes, a pioneer. And not only was she there at this neat dinner panel that I moderated, but also Shannon Roulard, who is the director of the U.S. Women's Amateur Championship and the U.S. Women's Senior Open and the U.S. Women's Open Championship. And so she was representing some of the goals of the USGA and definitely the growth of the USGA, but also celebrating the fact that for the first time ever in 2018, there will be a U.S. Women's Senior Open. I don't know why it took so long. And it's a good question. I don't know that I definitely got an answer. The USGA announced it back in 2015. They've been working now toward this goal for a few years. They wanted to make sure that they did it the right way, that the inaugural U.S. Women's Senior Open would be a marvelous event, not just kind of thrown together. And so it'll be held at the Chicago Golf Club, which is a founding member of the USGA, one of these incredible, iconic courses. And that's kind of what we were celebrating. And the trophy was there. It was so shiny. No names on it, nothing. But it was presented to some of these older players who will take place in this U.S. Women's Senior Open by Paula Creamer, who kind of flew in and walked the trophy into this big dinner they were having, and then had to leave and get back to practice. But it just kind of cool, this idea of pioneers and trailblazers making today's LPGA and women's golf as successful and as high profile and also as prosperous for young women. It's a process in every sport where the athletes who come before, in the decades before, they not only do they kind of slam through doors and bust through glass ceilings, whether men or women, but they add to the fan base and they help their own leagues to figure out how to do it the right way. We would just talk to Jim Barnett of, NBA back in the late 60s and the 70s. And we only had a taste of some of his stories, but we asked him about, I asked him about some of the crowds that he played in front of. And he mentioned an opening night playing in front of 3,000 people and how it just never used to be like it is today with the NBA. And that's the kind of stuff that, that athletes of a couple decades ago, that's the kind of stuff that was normal for them. But now we'd think, what? That's crazy. U.S. Senior Women's Open for the first time in 2018 in Chicago. The men have had one since 1980. So it's high time that the women had one as well. And it's for golfers over 50, and it's some of the greats, just incredible names. Pat Bradley and Amy Alcott and Jane Geddes. And I did ask if Annika Sorenstam was eligible, but she's not yet. But she will be pretty soon. And something else that was really funny, too. Think about it. If you haven't been playing golf on a regular basis, even if you are a former professional golfer, how long might it take you to get ready for a tournament of this caliber? There's $1 million purse that goes along with this U.S. Women's Senior Open. And so Jane was talking about how she started to play golf more on a regular basis and that, it's about retraining the muscles and getting that muscle memory back to, not back to what it was, but at least to the point where it's more familiar again. So that was kind of cool. And the USGA gave me a couple of stats that I thought were incredible. How about this? One out of every 75 jobs in the U.S. is impacted by the golf industry. One out of every 75 jobs in the U.S. is impacted by the golf industry. And in 2016, 2.5 million people tried golf for the first time. That's more than any year, including the 2.4 million in 2000, which was at the peak of the Tiger Woods popularity. So golf is actually growing, believe it or not, as much as you may think that the economic downturn and the closing a lot of different golf courses around the country has hurt the industry. And certainly that's hard to see, but people continue to pick up the game of golf and they do it younger and younger. And it's more and more little girls who are getting into golf, which is awesome. I'm telling you, send your daughters into golf. You could get their college scholarships paid for. 1 hour to go from Chicago. Thanks for joining us After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.